we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Wirral News, read by Charlotte Green.
New invisible hearing aid has to be seen to be believed.
And our thanks to Alan Dinwoody for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Roisin Connaty. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Kevin Day. Jeremy, who are not allowed to become political prisoners?
Oh, OK. David Cameron's all excited and feeling a bit cocksure now that the economy is crawling out of recession because of the massive production of metal cones with fire in them in the summer. But he keeps doing this weird thing of announcing things in the Commons that nobody else knows about, and he's forgotten to tell the rest of his cabinet. So he'll suddenly say, "Henceforth I shall be known as the Lord Cameron." And this week, Dominic Grieve, who's this rather sort of diffident, lawyerly lawyer, really, which is a good sort of adjective for a lawyer. He's and also an observant Anglican. I don't know why you'd need to be observant if you're an Anglican particularly. It was Jehovah's Witness, you need to have your eyes peeled. But anyway, point being, Dominic Grieve pointed out that were we to refuse to comply with the Strasbourg court ruling that prisoners must have votes, we'd be in breach of our obligations to the Human Rights Convention, which was formulated partly by us after the Second World War, and we'd be in rights trouble. So he said this, that we might have to go along and give prisoners votes, but Cameron left him in the lurch by announcing that no prisoner, I would be sick in my pants at the thought of some lag voting. And you think, is it that much of a privilege? I think if you were doing a long stretch, you'd think cushy job in the library, maybe parole. Being given the right to choose to be governed by some combination of Cameron, Clegg and Miliband, I don't see as a great privilege, really. But if you want people to rejoin society, presumably it's quite a good idea to get them to take an interest and to start voting. And you'd think that Tories would be quite keen on prisoners voting because most criminals do lean towards the Conservative Party. And that's not me being bigoted. That's true, because if you think about it, crime is just the logical extension of market forces.
But also, Joe, he doesn't want prisoners to vote because quite a few of his angry ex-mates are going to be in prison soon.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about Geoffrey Archer and Conrad Black and Jonathan Aitken, I mean, it's practically a safe Tory seat prison, isn't it?
See, half of them are in the Lords, so they don't get to vote anyway. But part of the problem with this is if prisoners did vote, where would they vote? Because if they voted where the prison was, that meant if you lived anywhere near a prison, your MP would be elected by the prison, which would be fine, but he probably wouldn't care much about your bins and stuff.
Well, you maybe have a special prison constituencies, like Long Latin East and things like that.
Well, yeah, you'd have a coalition between like the Conservatives, the Liberal Democrats and the prisoners.
Yeah.
It would be quite nice if it'd be a hung parliament, and that's almost like bringing about hanging.
Could we not meet the EU halfway and have a sort of X Factor theme and only use prisoners when there's a deadlock?
I read one objection.
Crazy Mike's going to decide this one.
Dominic Grieve said that if the ban was lifted, they were looking into ways of stopping inmates from voting. And you think, well, just put the voting booths outside the prison gates. It's not like a difficult thing to do.
But it's all about having a fight with Europe, because the obligation is you're not allowed to ban all prisoners from voting by the virtue of them being prisoners. So if you give some prisoners the vote, you're fine. Give prisoners the vote if they're going to get out next year.
Basically, what this is about, it's
about Cameron not wanting to do something that the European Court of Human Rights says he has to. Because he's got a human right not to do what the European Court of Human Rights has to.
The trouble is, if you don't give prisoners human rights, then technically they're categorised as animals, and then you have to make them free range and then they escape.
I mean, what are the percentage of prisoners that vote anyway? That's the thing.
Well, none, because they can't vote.
But I mean, that would vote anyway, that's what I mean. Like, if they got the vote, well, how many of them would actually vote?
I don't know if they have a vote on it in the audience.
David Cameron has defied Europe and pledged not to give prisoners the vote despite the ban infringing their human rights. In Europe, prisoners are allowed to vote. Another piece of the Silvio Berlusconi jigsaw falls into place. David Cameron has refused to back down over the issue, or to put it in terms that Europe will understand, he's pulled his lorry across the hard shoulder and set fire to some sheep. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, who needs extra tuition because their figures don't add up?
Oh, yes, that would be the government. We are going to be £1 billion worse off because of the tuition fees, even raising the tuition fees to £9,000 a year. They're not getting the jobs, the money that they thought they were going to get when they leave university, so they're not paying their fees back, and a lot of them are emigrating, so the taxpayer is probably going to be £1 billion down.
Which one? Which taxpayer?
Just you.
Me. I'm covering it.
The whole thing, tuition fees, is such a farce. Basically, the reason why it's gone wrong is because they set the limit that universities could charge for fees. What was it, £9,500?
Yeah.
And they said
yeah,
to them, you can charge anything up to £9,500. And all the universities were like, right, then we'll charge £9,500. And they're like, no. We said anything up to £9,500. And they said, yes, £9,500. And they went, bugger. And that's it.
They've got the tuition fee sums wrong. They miscalculated the number of badges. They got the Virgin Trains single. Are they not allowing them to take calculators into these exams?
The report was commissioned by the Higher Education Policy Institute, or HIPPI. I don't know why they sound so chipper. They stated that the sums were based on a dangerous assumption that the future will be like the past. Well, which is a tactic that has worked wonders for the Conservatives so far, I think.
The government sort of acted like loan sharks and sort of didn't really work it out. They just like, we'll give them loads of money and then we'll get the money back, they'll pay a bit of interest, they'll have a degree. And then at the end, someone just went, when are we getting the money? Oh. No one seems to know where we're getting the money, but where they gone? Australia? Oh, God, oh, dear.
I think they're worried about students from the EU coming over, aren't they?
Yeah.
Getting a part-time job presenting a topical quiz show and then... leaving when they finish their media studies degree. I think that's one of the biggest worries. A new report from the Higher Education Policy Institute says that the government has badly underestimated the cost to the public purse of raising tuition fees to a maximum of £9,000 a year. According to the report, the government didn't realise that many students would be unable to pay back loans, which is fair enough. It's not as if there's been a recent massive financial crisis triggered by institutions giving people loans they couldn't possibly afford. The report blames University Minister David Willetts for making potentially misleading claims. Mr. Willetts' nickname is Two Brains. Sadly, one of them is Jeremy Hunt's and the other is Fern Cotton's. 2 points to Roisin. Hugo, why am I glad that I'm not editing this question?
I suspect that this might have something to do with Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, I'd keep coughing if I was you.
Yeah. My main concern about the whole Jimmy Savile fuss is that as an employee of News International, I'm just really, really keen and at pains to treat BBC employees unconnected to the scandal with every bit of the kind of respect and tact that the BBC treated people like me during the phone hacking scandal. Because it can't be easy for employees of the BBC being the foot soldiers of a mafia state and having their entire morality compromised every time they accept a paycheck, as is obviously the case. So it's important to be compassionate in this respect, and I'm prepared to be so.
You do know what show you're doing here, don't you?
So was Murdoch a pedo as well? Is that what you're trying to tell us? That was a very roundabout way of saying it. You no, just come out with it.
No, darling, he's Australian. He wears speedo. It's a completely different thing.
The Savile thing, it's basically soaring in two directions now. Firstly, you've got the accusations about Jimmy Savile himself that the subject of one inquiry, and the idea that there might have been a paedophile ring at the BBC, which is a sort of, it's a fascinating term, paedophile ring. I sort of think of it as being like a bull ring, but where you wave dolls at paedophiles and they charge at you and then you stab them to death with a sword or something. So there's one inquiry into that. And there's another one into Newsnight. There was a Newsnight investigation into Jimmy Savile and sex crimes, and it was shelved, it was parked, it was not broadcast at around the same time that the BBC was broadcasting Christmas tributes to the recently late Jimmy Savile. And there's terrible fuss about who knew what when, because obviously this is a far more serious matter than somebody abusing children.
And the BBC Newsnight was then investigated by the BBC's Panorama.
Yeah, and now being discussed by the BBC's News Quiz.
Yeah.
One of the major problems with this is that for years, people interested in promoting child safety have been at pains to emphasise that sometimes a child abuser is the last person you would suspect. Well, this has rather blown that idea out of the water, hasn't it? Because, you know, Newsnight was pulled because it might have suggested that possibly Jimmy Savile was a paedophile. I think that suggestion was made over the 40 years that the BBC put him on television more or less every day, whether or not anybody wanted to see him. This completely uncharismatic, untalented, dysfunctional man. Nobody knows why he was ever given a series in the first place. The Director General didn't know. Every dog on the street knew. Because dogs have sixth sense, but unfortunately their communication skills are very limited. So people saying, what's that, Lassie? Skippy's fallen down the old mine shaft. No, shovel a paedophile. What? What's that? What's that, Lassie? Shovel a paedophile and he's not the only one. What? What? How much more of a child abuser could you look like than Jimmy Savile, for God's sake?
His whole CV read like something from Forrest Gump. Like, he's got a papal knighthood.
Yeah, because the Catholic Church has been very good record on child.
It's called hiding in plain sight. I knew a chap who was a drug dealer who decided that the more he looked like a drug dealer, the less he would get arrested. He didn't quite see it through. It's odd, though. The Daily Mail are clearly implying that it is the fault of the BBC, because they're clearly saying that Jimmy Savile was quite a nice, mild-mannered chap. But as soon as he stepped inside the BBC, something just clicked.
The bit I don't, just to help me with the newspaper thing here, Hugo, because newspapers have gone on about not having statutory regulation because they must keep their investigative journalism powers. How come nobody in the 40 years of the newspapers had a look at it at all? Why is everybody just blaming the BBC?
Yeah, no answer. I mean, you can look at that the other way around. You can say, oh, what's the point in regulation when the BBC, that's the most highly regulated bit of the media, still managed to have a failure like this? But again, I'm talking about the Newsnight thing rather than the Savile thing. I mean, you can't really regulate against that as such. Basically, people are focusing and obsessing about the Newsnight thing and the journalistic failings, which did happen, but because it's much easier to think about that and write about that and look into that and find someone to blame for that. And it's very hard to find someone to blame for stuff that happened 30 years ago, especially when he's dead.
It's not so much the new dice and the stuff, it's that they still put the tribute on. If they just cancelled the tribute, then I think it'd be nil-nil again. But it was sort of, not only
both.
Are we not going to take it seriously, what you're telling us,
we're just
going to
put both
on,
and we can all decide, we can all make our mind up.
Vote with the red button.
Vote with the red button.
Hero or pedo, you decide.
Tuesday, the Director General of the BBC, George Entwistle, was questioned by MPs on the Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee about why a Newsnight investigation into Jimmy Savile was shelved last year. The editor of Newsnight, Peter Rippon, is currently on sabbatical while the BBC investigates why he didn't report his suspicions earlier. Five Live presenter Victoria Derbyshire sent a tweet asking if every BBC employee who made a poor editorial decision would be treated like Peter Rippon, and I hope the answer's yes, because I could do with a holiday. Just so we're all really clear, this programme is being edited by Lindsay Fenner, who reports to her executive producer Steve Canny, who reports to the head of the comedy department Jane Batoud, who reports to Gwyneth Williams, the network controller of Radio 4, who reports to Tim Davey, the head of audio music, who reports to George Entwistle, the director general, and it's nothing to do with me. 2 points to Hugo. Kevin, listen to this. Kevin, who is no longer more equal than others?
This is the potentially very significant story that women will now be able to claim money going back quite some time if men doing equal jobs have been paid more than them during the same period. Potentially very significant. Unfortunately, the news was delivered outside Birmingham Town Hall in a Birmingham accent. So the significance was somewhat undercut, and I say this because no significant news works in the Birmingham. My in-laws are from Birmingham, and Birmingham's a lovely city, but I was taken to a church service on Easter Sunday, the most important day in the Christian calendar. The vicar was a little bit late, so the congregation retreated to the curate delivering the news that God had risen by the words, "Christ is risen, Terry's going to be a bit late."
Are you saying that momentous announcements would have had less weight in a Birmingham accent?
Without a doubt.
That's a terrible thing to say. I have in my hands a bit of paper. I've got a dream.
If James...
I had a dream. I was on the top of the bus naked. But nothing to do with racial harmony.
If JFK announced a Cuban Missile Crisis in the Birmingham accent, nothing. And that's the same with this debate, this thing. And it's potentially, I mean, it's very serious. It turns out that although most of the people involved were in lower grades, were in cleaning jobs, and apparently some of the women became suspicious because the men had solid gold dustpans and brushes. The worrying thing, of course, for the government and their friends is that it particularly applies to bankers and bankers' bonuses. So there will be a lot of female bankers who will now be wondering why they didn't get as much as male bankers. And the most important thing is that it used to be only 6 months. If you found out within 6 months you could claim, now it's been stretched to 6 years.
I have to say on this one, which might surprise you a bit on the equal pay thing, I will freely admit that women do not do as much work as men, and you know why? Because we get stuff right the first bloody time.
Oh, my dear. You must be very tired after all that talking. Why don't you go and have a lie down? I'll go and get your smelling salts, shall I?
Do you know what? Like that was a very particular round of applause, which is the round of applause mainly by women and a couple of men trying to get back into good books.
Did you see this week Britain slipped down to 18th place in the equality rankings? You'll be pleased to know that in the top 10 were Iceland, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark. The Daily Mail reported that the UK was ranked below Lesotho, the Philippines, Nicaragua and Latvia, and they said it in a way that suggested these were all made-up places.
Yeah, but we have tried to be more like Scandinavian countries by having lap dancing clubs. We have. We have a very thriving lap community in this country.
Do you know, though, in Iceland, they have this wonderful female prime minister, and because she didn't really want to be prime minister, but nobody else wanted to be, because they had slight issues with their banking and their volcanoes. And so she thought, oh, sod it, I'll just make rules that I like. So they don't have lap dancing classes. what is it called? Clubs. In Iceland, because one of the first laws she passed was that it's illegal in Iceland to profit from somebody else's nudity. Don't you think it's a fantastic
yes.
law?
Does that mean one can lap dance in the privacy of one's own home, a sort of lap dancing cottage
yeah.
industry?
You can't make money out of it. You can be a prostitute, but you can't be a pimp.
Yeah, so if you want to do it, all I can do is say, well done.
Yeah.
So feel free.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised how many people don't want to do it when they're just getting a well done. Well, I hate when go on hen weekends, which bother me anyway. It's a hen night, not a weekend. Anyway, people sometimes make you do these like pole dancing classes. Like, and sort of, I don't want to learn to be a stripper because you're getting married. Sort of reclaiming this sort of soul back to us. It's awful.
It's supposed to be postmodernly ironic or something, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just filth.
We clearly have very different friends. On one hen weekend, we went to the Louvre. Very nice, it was too. A group of women who worked for Birmingham City Council have been given the green light to sue their employer for equal pay in a ruling that extends the time limit for claims from 6 months to 6 years. Experts have warned that extending the time limit could lead to a flood of historic claims, with Beryl, a dinner lady from Solihull, already laying claim to the Kingdom of Saxony. 2 points to Kevin. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Rashida got 4 points, but so too have Hugo and Kevin. We start round two with a cutting from Flight International.
Both pilots of a German Wings Airbus A319 were badly affected by fumes while approaching Cologne.
And our thanks to Chris Casey for sending us that. Jeremy, why won't we hear that the drugs don't work?
Well, who would have thought that pharmaceutical companies are not entirely honourable? I know, I was horrified. What it is that drug companies are basically run by people who think there is so much sickness, suffering and unnecessary death in the world, I smell money. And so they produce drugs, but they want to make as much money out of them as possible. So, for example, if they're testing a drug and it's going really well, they don't want to say, "Here, we're making brilliant discoveries on this, you should all follow this line of research," because they want the patent. If, on the other hand, they release a drug and it turns out that giving it to children means they spontaneously combust, they'll say, "I don't think we want to trouble people with unnecessary side effect information. Should we just not tell them until we've made a load of money?" So basically, we're all taking all sorts of pharmaceuticals that are probably very, very bad for us.
I was ill not very long ago, and I took the drugs that were prescribed, and nobody warned me about the awful side effects, which was that I was perfectly fit to go to work the next day. So I was going to say one result that's come out recently from a clinical trial is that taking drugs makes it much easier to win the Tour de France, which I think is...
Well, obviously it would. I mean, that was a ridiculous case. I mean, are we doing this, by the way? Are we doing
what?
The banning of Lawrence Thingy, of
no,
Louis Armstrong?
No, chat away about Louis Armstrong.
Well, because... You know, was it Pat McQuaid said, Lawrence Armstrong is banned from cycling? I thought, you can't. What if he just wants to go and get a paper? You can't. You can have snipers outside his house. I mean, if you ban somebody from driving, it's not because they drank alcohol which made them drive really well. It's because they drank alcohol which made them run over a pensioner. All he did was take drugs that made him cycle much better than he would have done otherwise.
He also called a French policeman a pleb.
Oh, well,
that would do it. It does say that half of all completed clinical trials never make it to publication. And I was thinking about this, they should put in more sadomasochism, because that'll send it to the top of the charts straight away.
I'd like the idea of doing a clinical trial, but just sort of sneaking in some helium and fake scabs. So when they come to check you in the morning, just cover yourself in fake scabs, go, I don't think it's going very well.
You know when you have your sperm tested, it always looks a bit rubbish because it's not very much.
No, story I know of it my looks life. A bit rubbish, but I don't ever test it. Just...
Okay. When you have your sperm tested, it looks a bit rubbish because it's just in a little pot, and the pot has sterile on it, which isn't very encouraging. My tip: take a carton of natural yogurt, just bump it up a little bit.
You just need the one little pot.
The Conservative MP, Dr. Sarah Wollaston, is leading a campaign that will oblige pharmaceutical companies to publish the results of all their clinical trials, not just the favourable ones. At the moment, drug companies are twice as likely to publish good news as bad, the exact opposite of the Daily Mail. Dr. Wollaston cited the fact that the UK has spent £500 million stockpiling Tamiflu, despite companies holding back full clinical study reports. The negative side effects of Tamiflu haven't been released because the makers have a Christmas tribute to Tamiflu planned. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, why is independence not the nuclear option?
Oh, yes, this is Scotland. If it gets its independence, is going to kick out Trident, our nuclear arms, like an angry ex. Get out and take your bloody stuff with you! So obviously we don't want that. England doesn't want that. It's got nowhere else to put them. So it's sort of going, oh, you know, where are we going to put it? I haven't got a new flat yet. Where am I going to put my submarines?
They said our submarines may have to go overseas. And you think, no, underseas. Underseas.
There was the guy who heads the Scottish Affairs Select Committee, Ian Davidson. He was talking about the submarines having to leave Scotland, and he said the full details of how Trident would be removed from Scotland must be worked out. And it's like, they're on submarines.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to leave by road, are they? Post them. I mean, come on.
The Scots haven't quite thought this through yet, either. If they do get full independence, which would be lovely for them, and they do insist that we take the nuclear weapons back, then we should just threaten them with the nuclear weapons that we've got. And then we'll them.
Have we done anything with that Olympic stadium yet? Can we not put them there?
It's full of surface-to-air missiles already.
Oh, no.
Will they be able to cope, the submarines, when they're released into the wild? Will they just sort of sit around in the loft, sort of looking all sheepish, and have to throw stones at it to make them run away?
Like
feed
Willy.
Square sausages that they have in Scotland.
Submarine leaping over the sea wall.
How much does Trident cost a year? Have you got the figures? It's
no,
massive,
it's
isn't
massive.
It? It's absolutely...
It's a lot. Yeah.
And why? Why do we... because William Hague himself said, this country faces no existential threat. I thought, good. I'm glad this country faces no existential threat, because I don't want other French philosophers coming over here.
An independent Scotland could force the closure of Trident's submarine base on the River Clyde, with the construction of replacement facilities to house the nuclear deterrent taking up to 20 years to build. It's ridiculous. I know a Polish man can do it in half that time. Philip Hammond, the Defence Secretary, said there was no need to plan for such an eventuality because the government was confident that Scotland would choose to remain part of the UK. That is not a plan, that is just being hopeful. Britain has four nuclear submarines, one to protect England, one to protect Wales, one to protect Northern Ireland, and one to lurk around Loch Ness to keep the tourists coming.
Do you know, they actually believe that. If you joke with Scottish people about Loch Ness, and I was up in that part of the world, and you sort of say, I've seen a monster, and if you joke, I've seen a monster, and they all have. It's not a matter of humour there. And I was talking to this taxi driver, and I said, so have you seen the monster? And he said, well, let's just see. One night, I did see something. It had the head of a cat on a cat's body.
What was it?
nuclear submarine.
2 points to Roisin. Hugo, listen to this.
Sorry.
like sorry. Hugo, who is Trim? Great radio. Hugo, who is très désolé 30 ans trop tard?
Is this Michael Gove?
It is.
He has apologised to his old French teacher. He was a pupil at Robert Gordon's in Aberdeen, school up in Aberdeen, and he wrote to apologise to his old French teacher, a man called Daniel Montgomery, for showing off all the time. And he said, I'm really sorry, I was badly behaved, I spent all my time asking clever dick questions. And his teachers replied and said, no, we didn't think you were that bad, and we all thought you were going to be leader of the Conservative Party. And you have to wonder what might prompt this man, this teacher who still teaches, to be so nice about the Secretary of State for Education. Why he's, you know...
Extraordinary.
Why he's bailing him out like this, yeah.
What was extraordinary was Gove said they recognised their teacher was ripe for ragging. Where did he go to school? Mallory Towers. He makes Billy Bunter seem hip.
He got the worst response possible, which was, we didn't think you were that bad. Because what he wanted was, you was a right tearaway, weren't you? You were shocking. We couldn't handle you. He said, well, you're right, we didn't notice.
But you sort of...
Well, I was being really cocksure, were you? I didn't know. Where did you sit?
You sort of feel like...
I was sitting right at the front, being cocksure.
I'm worried about
you.
All this cocksure, clever dick stuff. I mean, there's something on his mind.
So what kind of clever dick questions would he ask as a child? Have you considered turning this school into an academy? I mean, what's that?
So don't apologise to your old teacher. Apologise to the teachers you called enemies of progress just 2 weeks ago.
I think the teacher did know how bad he is. He said, oh, no, we didn't think you were that bad. We just thought you were going to be the leader of the Tory party.
In Scotland,
he looks like
well.
He's going to be... Yeah. He's going to be the leader of the Tory party. Yeah, they hated you.
Education Secretary Michael Gove has apologised to his former French teacher for being a clever dick. Well, he's half right. Gove is that rare thing, a Scottish Conservative. He's actually protected by the Wild Wildlife Foundation, which means that any day now he'll be gunned down by Prince Philip. 2 points to Hugo. Kevin, who is set for a reprieve?
Yes, this is the kill cull called off. I discovered the other day that cull was actually a euphemism, in which case it's the worst euphemism that's ever been invented. We don't want to say kill them. Cull? I don't think they'll ever see through that. No wonder Badger's just wandering along with a kind of insouciant manner. Yes, rather bizarrely, there's a lot of disappointed, frustrated badger killers on the prowl. So if you live in Gloucester and you've got a black and white cat, I'd keep it in for a couple of weeks. As I was you. And it's the best excuse. He said, as winter approaches, badgers tend to hibernate at different times, which makes it sound like a massive game of whack-a-mole. Basically, all over the country, badgers in different parts are popping their heads up and down again. The best excuse, Owen Paterson, who's the agricultural secretary, who said, it's because of the Olympics and the Paralympics and policemen not being available. Now, I'm the last one to accuse any government minister of being out of touch with current events. But I'm fairly certain both the Olympics and the Paralympics have dribbled to a close. I do think that not only are there policemen available, there are athletes with spiked shoes, javelins, and all sorts of other implements with which you could kill badgers. He's missing a trick.
Well, I quite like the fact that the pro-badger groups launched a guerrilla campaign, which I thought was so...
I thought there were twice as many badgers as they thought, and
well,
they realised that the
they're
cost...
Outnumbered.
Yeah, they can't kill the badgers because there are
too many.
They can't cut down the number of badgers because there are too many badgers.
Yeah,
the badgers have the upper hand, and the badgers are actually armed.
But do we need to kill them? I've never seen a badger in my life. No. I once went to a badger enclosure at a wildlife zoo, and I still didn't see a badger.
Was it during the Olympics?
Yeah.
Somebody sent round a sort of a cutting or a picture on Twitter of a page from the Northern Echo when the badger cull was called off, and they had a picture of a badger sort of with its mouth open, and underneath it said, a badger last night celebrating. Regional news, wonderful.
Controversial government plans to cull thousands of badgers have been delayed at the 11th hour amid questions over effectiveness of the plans. The postponement marked another U-turn for the government. It's tempting to think they couldn't organise a piss-up in a brewery, but they obviously did. That's how they came up with all these policies in the first place. G4S had promised to provide over 1 million security forces to help with the badger cull, but in the end, just sent one work experience student with a spade. 2 points to Kevin. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Roisin have got 8 points, but so too have Hugo and Kevin. We start round three with a cutting from the Daily Express.
Mental health issues are too often dismissed as all in the head, says a pioneer in treatment, Professor James Nutt.
And our thanks to Sarah Burley for sending us that. Jeremy, listen to this.
Hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Jeremy, who is Top Banana because they monkey around in the kitchen?
Well, this is the confusion that people have about the difference between apes and monkeys, because we're related to chimps, evolutionary terms. We're not related to monkeys. We are primates, especially if we're bishops. But what it is, we evolved more quickly because grandmothers, as the forests receded and toddlers could not act as gathering fruit, they needed grandmothers to forage for tubers because wind instruments played a very important role. Without brass bands, we would have had no northern culture and therefore not been able to dig coal properly and heap used power stations. And the other story is the one about we've got big brains because we eat cooked food, which really is one in the eye for the raw food diet, because you know those miserable people who keep trying to find less and less enjoyable ways of feeding ourselves, you know, by just inventing things that are wrong with them. So, oh, I'm water intolerant. Oh, dear. I can't eat food. It just turns brown and falls out of my bottom. But anyway, there's a raw food diet, and that's rubbish, because in order to have a big brain, you've got to eat cooked food, because some things are horrible. Now, carpaccio is nice, a few slices, slightly air-dried, but you don't want to eat a whole cow. Whereas, if you've cooked it, you can eat a whole cow, and you can digest it. So the reason that we're all really, really brainy is the inventor of the oven.
You can't.
Which was the oven was invented by Spinning Jenny at the Battle of Cardigan. First time that steam was used to iron a salmon.
But it's strange, because it said this whole new report said we are better than apes because we can cook.
Yeah, well, basically.
Apes can make tea.
They can.
I can't really cook. So I'm a little bit worried. I'm not as good as an ape now.
Jeremy, you'll be able to answer these questions. I've got an American brother-in-law who says, and I can't answer it, and I'm a clever man, and he says, well, if we're evolved from gorillas, how come there are still gorillas?
We're not evolved from
gorillas. From gorillas.
There you go, that's the answer.
That'd be the answer.
It's as simple as that.
I think that monkeys are smarter than humans, because can I get my windscreen wipers off? No. So I have to go to Longleat, and can I just say it's cheaper than Whole Foods? Can I just say that?
So what do they cook, then?
What, ooh, cave people?
Mm. They don't.
Just mastodon.
Saber-toothed tiger.
Mammoth meringue pie. pterodactyl roulade.
We might be better cooks than apes, but they make far more amusing waiters.
On roller skates.
Yeah.
New research suggests that people are smarter than monkeys because they can cook. According to the study, the brain is incredibly energy hungry. So remember, when going to bed at night, don't just leave your brain on standby, turn it off at the wall. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, who's in it to win a caravan, amongst other things?
Oh, this is there was a report about what people who run the lottery spend their money on. They bought a lot of caravans. There was nothing too extravagant, I didn't think, but they didn't do anything for charity. It didn't seem like no one gave a penny to charity, which is a little bit disappointing.
Do you play? Do you do the lottery thing?
No.
No. I've never won. I do it, but I never won. I once did fill in the item number on one of those slips they have in Argos, and it turned out it was in stock, and I think it was probably a similar feeling of excitement.
I remember the very first night of the lottery, my dad was very excited, and they went six, and my dad went, I've got six. And they went five. Dad said, I've got five. I said, Dad, this is the countdown.
The ones who carry on working, you know.
Oh, lots of people carry on working. Yeah.
I just think it must be, if you sort of come into work and you work in admin, and then everyone's sort of, you know, going to have a bad day, going, yeah, I'm having a bad day as well. They're like, yeah, but you've got 193 million.
Of the average win, laid end to end in £10 notes would stretch for 25 miles.
Whoa.
God, £10 notes laid out for 25 miles, that sounds like the version of Hansel and Gretel that George Osborne was taught as a child. I quite like this. The study was carried out by Camelot and Oxford Economics. It's nice when real and fictional places put aside their differences and work together. I think that's lovely.
The other bizarre, after caravans, it was walk-in wardrobes was the most... Yeah. I think for that money, I'd want Narnia at the end of my walk-in.
A study by Camelot has revealed just what lottery millionaires spend their money on. Over £8.5 billion have been won since 1994, with winners buying 8,000 new homes, 17,000 new cars and 300 caravans. The research also shows that 28% of winners bought a walk-in wardrobe, or a flat, as it's known in London. Playing the lottery is the second quickest way to become a millionaire. The quickest way is to be a billionaire and run a rail network for a month. 2 points to Roisin. Hugo, why shouldn't you get your knickers in a twist?
This is a survey about the amount of people who get hurt by their own clothes. I think it's 1 in 2 adults get hurt by their own clothes.
Yes.
I think it was 6 in 10 women have painful bras. 1 in 8 adults say they get headaches from hats that are too tight.
The other problem is a lot of women suffer friction from thongs. So purely out of research, I thought I would try that. It's like a cheese cutter.
My clothes hurt me when they shrink when I'm not there.
Yeah. I had a cupboard like that. You put clothes in and then you leave them for 6 months and then they're suddenly too small for you.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Come back. And they all do it together. Okay, like, oh, right, leave me just naked then.
Gang up on me.
I know.
I used to think, what's the point in button flies on trousers when there are zips? Until one day when I was in a bit of a hurry... And I couldn't do up my zip fast enough, and I thought, oh, for button flies now. Had to call the fire brigade. Didn't really. Well, I was in considerable... Well, the scrotum is a wrinkly thing. And if you think about the cog mechanism of a zip and its interaction with very wrinkly flesh, it was like a meeting between Keith Richards and Hannibal Lecter. It was absolutely terrible. I'm a bit worried because you know how grey hair is supposed to be quite distinguished? You know, a few streaks of grey. Well, yeah, on the head, round the genitalia, not so much. Mine looks distinctly like a badger, which makes me extremely nervous to leave a metropolitan area in the current climate.
A report from the British Osteopathic Association claims that almost 1 in 2 adults suffers aches, pains or injuries from handbags, bras, belts, hats and other items of clothing. 1 in 8 adults said they had developed headaches from wearing a hat they didn't realise was too tight. Do you think that's why the Queen always looks so grumpy? I've said I'm the opposite of fashion conscious. I'm fashion unconscious. People start talking about it, I slip into a coma. 2 points to Hugo. Kevin, why does the Man of Steel no longer see things in black and white?
This is Clark Kent, who is resigning from his job with the Daily Planet because of the lack of hard news, because of an irresistible offer from the Huffington Post. He's decided that the newspaper world is no longer for him, and I think that's probably a cover story. I think he's been done for phone tapping.
It's quite fitting that the Superman's becoming a vlogger because he's finally got a job that means he can wear his pants on the outside all the time.
Is it because of the end of print journalism that he's having to move on? Because journalists are getting really... You know that journalists are jumpy when they're prepared to go on BBC News Channel at 1 o'clock in the morning. Let's have a look at tomorrow's papers. And there's some poor bloke thinking, maybe if I do this, they'll keep me for another week. But you think, if you know life, and you went on one Sunday morning, they've asked me to go, Andrew Marr, do I want to go and talk to Andrew Marr on a Sunday morning and read The Observer in front of him? No, I'll read The Observer in me pants at home. I don't want to go... sit with Andrew. Oh, yes, this is a... And, well, I'm rather amused about this story about terrible suffering in the third world, which rather puts me in...
I didn't mind that I was on the Andrew Marr show, and I think it's probably because I had no idea you were watching wearing your pants, so I feel...
They should just have a thing where they say, now for a look at the papers, we've got, I don't know, Noam Chomsky and Christopher Biggins, and then they just sit there quietly reading the papers.
Would be amazing. Just facial expressions.
Yeah. Superman, a.k.a. Clark Kent, is to quit his job at the Daily Planet in disgust at declining journalistic standards. Clark Kent will in future pursue truth as an online reporter, putting the world to rights by typing a furiously worded post that two people will read. For years, Clark Kent has managed to keep his alter ego and superpowers a secret while working for the popular broadsheet The Daily Planet. That is unbelievable, isn't it? A popular broadsheet. 2 points to Kevin. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
A man called Ray Norman in Suffolk has sent this in, and it appears to be from a Scottish newspaper. A man has appeared before Perth Sheriff Court accused of causing fear and alarm by spraying tomato sauce. He also faces 3 other charges, 2 of which are assault. On Thursday, the court heard a similar but unrelated case involving a black pudding.
Miss Cardi.
This is a guy called John Bevere. It's an advert spotted for a podiatrist in Key West, Florida. And it says, "Think you've broken your foot? Come along to one of our walk-in clinics to find out for certain."
Miss Rifkin.
This is from Kenny Elloway in Dundee, from the Glasgow Airport website. And it says, "Local residents concerned about aircraft noise can now contact Glasgow Airport using a free phone telephone number. Calls to the line will be answered within 3 working days."
Mr. Day.
This is from Maureen Gooding, and it's an advert for a falconry experience at a local falconry centre. And it says, 2-hour falconry experience, chance to interact with a range of hawks and owls, instructor on hand throughout."
Let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Kevin have got 12 points, but following a Newsnight investigation, this week's winners are Jeremy and Roisin with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Evening Standard sent in by Katie Hawkes.
"Daniel Craig has admitted that stripping off for sex scenes as James Bond was not easy. He said, 'I don't care how many times I have to do it, it's going to be harder and harder the older I get.'"
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Roisin Conaty, Hugo Rifkind and Kevin Day. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Andy Walton, with additional material by Miranda Walker and Jack Bernhardt. The producer was Alexandra Smith.